This Hoko Mojo podcast is sponsored by the Columbia Festival of the Arts. Your summer starts here, online at columbiafestival.com. Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the Hoko Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at Lakeside Cafe in Columbia Town Center with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today, hi Dennis, joining us today as our guest is Gene Parker, the general manager, hi Gene, of Meriwether Post Pavilion. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. You know, Dennis, I came in again thinking a slow week, and you shot me down and said, nope, there's good stuff out there.
Well, there's always stuff happening in Howard County. Come on. First of all, I got to say, the weather gods are finally smiling upon us. Has this been like a rough May so far? I mean, it seems like April was more like May, and May's been more like April. It's been cold.
But you know what? I feel like our shows are every 2 weeks. We've either had blizzards or beautiful weather.
Exactly. I mean, the Fridays that we've done the show here, because I have a little I say at the end, beautiful day, and another beautiful day here in Town Center. So that's a little weather report. Let's start off and talk about this task force that the Howard County Citizens Association did on the Howard County General Hospital Emergency Room.
Sounds like a blue ribbon commission.
No. The Howard County Citizens Association. I have a history with this group.
Dennis, you got a history with everyone.
I have a history with it. But what really got me, you know, anybody knows that probably one of the biggest problems with healthcare in this country on a national scale is this whole tendency of people who are sick and don't have healthcare to use the emergency room as their minute clinic or their, you know, their health clinic. And that's after, I love this quote. This is from the Howard County Times. Article by Jennifer Broadwater. It says, after several meetings in the past year with hospital leaders, representatives from the County Department of Fire and Rescue Services, and the Health Department, the Howard County Citizens Association Committee released its final report on the hospital ER in April. And here we go. This is from Barbara Russell. What we found was that many people didn't really belong in the ER.
You know, Dennis, I have the good fortune of serving on the Board of Trustees of the Howard Hospital Foundation. And I got to tell you, I've been there 2 years. We're aware of this. This is an issue we've been looking at. And to Vic Broccolino's credit, he's been addressing this issue. We've been working very hard. They're part of the backup is, you know, the renovations, and they're now going to single bed rooms. They're trying to get people in there. Yeah, we're aware of it. We're working on it.
You know, they're well-meaning people. You know, I think they just have far too much time on their hands. Because, I mean, anyway, crazy. Another story in the news. We love this. Once again, dogs are in the news in Howard County.
Not just dogs. It's pit bulls again.
Maybe the most popular story in the news in Howard County this week because, once again.
Dennis, I got to tell you, I was reading this article on Explore Howard last night. And I like to look at the blog posts after each article.
Yeah, people make comments about it.
Yeah, and sometimes you get 3, 4, 5, 6. I swear to you, there must have been 50 posts regarding this. It's unbelievable.
It's about a dog.
So the whole issue is pit bulls. There was another pit bull attack, and unfortunately a gentleman got attacked, ended up with severe lacerations to his arm, ended up with, I think, 50 stitches in his arm.
You know, ironically, it was another cop.
A federal cop, right. I feel really safe that this federal cop couldn't protect himself from a pit bull.
This is the second time a dog incident in Howard County has involved, you know, a cop somehow. You know, either it's a victim or I don't know.
Nevertheless, and the guy was walking his dog, and unfortunately the dog was paralyzed from his injuries, and ultimately they put the dog
little
down.
Stewie.
Little Stewie. We're very sorry for Little Stewie.
Little Stewie. Rest in peace, Stewie.
What the heck? I mean, come on, what's up with all these dogs? Pit bulls attack. So the article went on and talked
life
about...
life in suburbia, I suppose, you know?
A lot of the posts were about should we be outlawing pit bulls?
I know.
Or is it the owners or is it the dogs? And, you know, one of the analogies made, and I'm not sure I completely agree with it, was guns. You know, guns don't kill people.
Right.
People that own guns and misuse
them.
Pit bulls do. So, anyway.
And, you know, well.
Then another story. The Republicans are out in full force this week. The Howard County Republicans announced first earlier in the week that they were going to make an announcement. And then at the Lincoln Day dinner, they actually did make the announcement that they are going forward with trying to get an amendment to the Howard County Charter, making it more difficult to approve county tax increases.
This is another – I tell you, I'm starting to get referendum fatigue. You know, here we go again. They'll get petitions out there. They'll have people – saying God knows what to get people to sign, and then...
But do you know how to sign if you're asked?
Yes, you have to sign exactly as your name appears on your voter registration card. Now, I know, you know, and we've talked about this before, it isn't the highest barrier to overcome, but no doubt that if they do not get the signatures that they need to get this on the ballot, we'll hear that, you know, democracy in Howard County has once again taken a giant step backwards, and... You know, this is against motherhood and mom's apple pie. And
wah, wah, wah. So, you know, what's interesting here is, you know, is this a good ploy or a good good decision for the Republicans? Are they going to make this an issue, the fact that taxes are coming, tax hikes are coming?
They don't know the tax hikes are coming.
No, they don't.
That's speculation. But,
you know, I think Mr. Fox, county executive for District 5, county councilman for District 5.
Greg Fox.
Greg Fox. Uh-huh. I think I don't have the quote in front of me, but he suggested that, you know, how many more... How many more tricks can we pull out of a hat?
Rabbits.
Well, I think he said tricks, but in any event.
You're not turning tricks on this show.
No, you know what? Yeah. but the point was, how long can we delay the inevitable? How long can we continue to sustain the current level of living, the current levels of employment, the current levels of community benefits without raising taxes?
Look, I get that. I get that. But, you know... What struck me when I first read about this initiative, it immediately I thought of the Shakespeare in the Ruins stuff that happens every summer at the old Patapsco Female Institute in Ellicott City. The first show, I think, this year is Much Ado About Nothing. And that's what I think this is. I mean, you know, we've just come through 4 years of terrible budget pressures in Howard County. You know, declining revenue from tax receipts, you know, declining contributions from the state. And yet, a democratically controlled council, and no tax raises. So, you know, they've dealt with the hard things. And granted, they've spent some more. I think they probably have some programs that could be cut. I'm not a big fan of Healthy Howard, but still, I think they've shown that they can use fiscal restraint and not raising taxes. So this is like saying, yeah, but you might.
Well, to me, the issue is not so much might they raise taxes, but is it appropriate to require a supermajority to raise taxes? And to me, it's more a kind of a philosophical discussion.
Well, you know, when they did this in California, it put them – Proposition 13 has put that state in a terrible situation. You know, they're still kind of ruining the day they did that. So anyway.
So just point of clarity, Mr. Fox did say rabbits. I stand corrected.
Not one to split hairs. Oh, I'm sorry. I could not resist.
So
you got something else?
Well,
there.
I got one more story. It actually comes from your blog.
My blog.
And our listeners, if you don't know, Dennis blogs regularly, actually daily. And Dennis has come out with his first election endorsement.
You know, it's going to be a long season. Let's start getting them out of the way, knocking them down. Did the easiest ones first.
Why was this so easy for you?
Well, you know... First of all, Dennis Schrader was our second guest on this show, and he is challenging. Actually, he's seeking to reclaim a seat he gave up and become once again the council representative for District 13, District 3. I'm sorry, a seat that's currently held by Jen Tarasa. And as I said in my blog, I think Jen is a fine person. I think she works very hard. I just don't think the job agrees with her.
So it's not that she's wrong for the job. The job is just wrong for her.
The job is wrong for her. And Dennis is Dennis. You know, you've gone to public hearings and you've watched how the council works. And really what you want on a council are people that seem to work well together. You don't do anybody any good if they're always at each other's throats or they're not in agreement or they're not working together as a team, regardless of Republican or Democrat. You know, for the good of the county, working together to move the county forward. I just kind of got the feeling that there are four of them that are doing that very well right now, and perhaps maybe Jen is not quite in that groove. So
I'm not even sure it's that she's not in the groove as much as I think she's a follower. I don't see a lot of initiative. I don't see a lot of, you know, fresh innovation out of her. I think she tends to sort of follow the crowd.
Again, not to disparage her. She's a fine person, I believe she works very hard at her job. I just think that Dennis Schrader would do a better job. So, yes, I've come out. There'll be more to come. As I said to another local blogger, Tom Cole, who writes the blog Cocoa Rising, I said, you know, the nice thing about this is that if you get those days during the summer and you got to write something and you can't think about it, I'll endorse somebody.
Plenty out there to endorse.
Now, as we start to segue to our guests, it's a big weekend in Howard County. Well, it's a big weekend in Baltimore. Preakness. on Saturday.
We have local proms.
Local proms. And actually, the Balloon Fest. Is that still going on at Turf Valley?
That is.
Yeah,
yep.
The Balloon Festival, part of the Preakness celebration, going on at Turf Valley.
Festival of the Arts has a big event this evening.
Yeah, the big fundraising event with Second City is, I think, the headliners. So that's going on. And
Dennis and I couldn't afford to go this year. We are looking for sponsors for the show.
The festival is a sponsor.
I know.
Yes, this show is sponsored by the Columbia Festival of the Arts. And we're very grateful for that. but also this weekend, in right here in Town Center, Columbia, Wine in the Woods.
Wine in the Woods.
Great weekend for it.
Beautiful weekend.
I finished
up with the rain. It's going to be a beautiful weekend. We're going to pick it back up on Monday.
Yeah, that's right. The rain will come back. That's fine. I don't mind if it rains on Monday. Just don't ruin my weekend. And sounds like the Wine in the Woods is a great weekend plan. I read with some interest that they're good, being sensitive to the woods this year and having rearranged where the booths are going to be located to kind of pay homage to the new CA plan for redeveloping Symphony. I don't know. But it should be a good weekend. And since we're in Symphony Woods, it's a good time to welcome our guest, Miss Jean Parker. Jean, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Jean is the general manager of Merriweather Post Pavilion. And Jean, you've been there
ever.
Forever. The venue opened in 1967. I was not there then, but I've been there since 1977 and full-time since 1983.
Okay. And you're a native Howard County?
I grew up in Howard County.
Okay. Played field hockey for Mount Hebron.
And a couple other sports.
And your daughter?
Not great at any of them, but, but my daughters are taking over that.
Your daughter's also a field hockey player? Or?
Yes, both of them
both
are.
Both of them, right.
The boys aren't. The girls are.
Now, how did you go from, when you grew up in Howard County, did you go right from high school into Merriweather? No.
Well, wait a minute. We got to go back to the field hockey thing. We got to bring the connection in here.
Okay.
So I understand that Dennis's significant other.
Yes, she played field hockey with you. Denise Geiger.
Oh, Denise. Okay, I knew Denise very well. And then her daughter played with my daughter
at
high school, yes.
At Glenelg, yeah.
Yep.
So there's a
this
whole...
is Howard County, isn't it?
Everybody knows everybody.
You know, it's a small town, but I wouldn't want to paint it.
Well, tell Denise I said hi.
That's awesome. You know, and we got, which is another, we got that little tidbit of information because we have a Facebook page for her, and then there's that.
Ah.
And Denise got on there, and she said, shared that little bit about the field hockey, and she did. She actually did. She mentioned that Allie also played with.
Allie did. Yes, she did.
Now, has your daughter finished at Glenelg?
Yeah, she's just finished her freshman year in college, and she played two sports there, and
wow.
She did awesome. She was rookie of the year in both of her sports in her conference, and she made first team all conference.
Now, where is she going
sports.
To school?
She goes to St. Mary's.
St. Mary's down in St. Mary's County.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what? Great
yeah.
school.
Yeah, it's a beautiful school.
I think that was one of Allie's. Allie's also on the Eastern Shore. She's over in Chestertown.
Right.
In
Washington. We saw her at her school when we were there. So that's great.
I know. This has nothing to do with Merriweather. You know, you came to Merriweather in 1977, which was after the last year I worked there. I worked there every year through high school and college.
You were in the parking lots.
No, those crews were under us, but I worked for Columbia Management.
Okay.
And we took care of the grounds, and actually we were in charge of the...
And with Steve...
Steve Tove.
Yeah, well, but there's also another Steve. Steve Klein.
Steve Klein, that's right.
Steve Klein. At River Hill Landscaping.
Yeah, but he wasn't in charge of our crew the last year I was there. It was a guy named Dennis Wilkerson who.
Okay, that name sounds familiar.
But
yeah.
Steve took over after him.
Oh, that's
tell
funny.
What, I'll buy you guys a gift certificate to Clyde's. Maybe you can pick this up at happy hour tonight.
But what my point was, and I still tell people, the best job I ever had was working summers at Merriweather. You work in a beautiful place.
It's a great job. I've never left. I've never had to have a real job, so it's fun.
So what did you start there doing?
I started there working outside and also in some of the concession stands. Back then, they didn't have a lot of concession stands. There was really just one little building there.
Right.
So I worked there, and then I worked outside on the event staff. And then eventually I started managing the event staff, and one thing leading to another. By the time I got out of college, my boss at the time and the Nederland organization wanted me to come on full-time, but I graduated with a degree in computer science. Why would I want to work in entertainment?
Has nothing to do with computer science.
Nothing to do with computer science. So I walked into the office just to be nice, to go on an interview, and by the time I left, I was a full-time employee there. Wow. And have been a full-time employee there ever since 1983. It's a lot of fun. There's always something new. Always a different challenge.
Now, that was 1977, so that was Nederlander.
That was Nederlander at the time. Yeah, through the beginning of 99. And it's changed owners since then.
Now, when we say owners, I mean, GGP actually owns the property.
Good point. Okay. And that would come from an attorney, so that
I,
is
I
an extremely good point, Paul.
No, I was actually just curious of the relationship when you say I worked for. So who did you actually work for? And so it was really Rouse Company, I guess.
Correct, yeah.
That had brought in this entertainment company to actually run the pavilion. Is that how it worked?
Correct. You're absolutely right. The Rouse Company at the time, now GGP, has an exclusive booking and operating arrangement with, at the time, the Nederland organization. And then as time went on, it was SFX.
Right.
And then it became Clear Channel.
Clear Channel, right.
And then the Rouse Company then kicked Clear Channel out, for lack of a better term. And then IMP came in under Seth Hurwitz and his partner, Rich Heineke, which owned the very successful 930 Club in D.C. And they're, you know, one of the best independent promoters and promoters, I should add, against the big guys, too, the Live Nations of the world in the entire country.
Yeah, they're actually a great local story. I mean, he's Seth and the 930 Club are part of the rock history of Washington, D.C. I mean,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you speak of 1977 when I started at Meriwether. It was the year Elvis died. And so, you know, just a lot of history.
I got lost that in my graduation. I wasn't paying attention to the passing of Elvis.
So with IMP coming in, what impact did that really have on the facility? It seems like it really got kicked up a notch. It seems like things really kind of improved, facilities improved, some of the shows kind of started to come back.
Correct. And Seth has always been great with challenges, and he's, you know, able to overcome, you know, many, many seemingly insurmountable hurdles. And what he did with Meriwether, he took a facility that was built in 1967,
yeah,
hadn't really been updated for the most part, and he was able to, with his checkbook basically, revive the venue. And it was doing a lot of little things. It was making the venue more of an escape. He added these really cool sculptures.
Yeah, the sculptures. Can you stop and talk about them for a minute? Where are those? I mean, how do you find them? They're wild things.
They are wild, and they come from, you know, just miscellaneous people throughout the country who want to showcase all of their artwork. In fact, we get calls all year long, even during the off-season when we're not even open, because people want to come and they want to tour the sculpture garden.
They want to look at the
sculpture. So that becomes it's an attraction.
Sure.
And
yeah,
Seth is really good at creating things like that. He's also, obviously, what he does the best is booking talent. You know, he has his 930 Club in D.C., and he's hit more home runs than grand slams with the little bands that eventually become big bands, like the Bare Naked Ladies of the World, the
right,
REMs,
right,
the Pearl Jams, a lot of shows in that regard.
Pretty good at spotting the up-and-comers.
Absolutely, really good at spotting those. So
now, there was kind of a flurry of activity when he came in. I know there was the Save Meriwether Initiative. There
Close was Meriwether.
Close Meriwether Initiative. There was a task force that I think had been put into place Blue Ribbon Task Force that we put into place to evaluate Meriwether and determine what should be done with it. There was talk of closing it. There was talk of keeping it. So can you talk a little bit about the interaction of all of those forces and how we got to, you know, keeping it, IMP coming in, and
now GGP making it one of the centerpieces of their town center redevelopment plan.
Yeah, absolutely, which is great. I mean, we've, you know, come real close to uncorking that champagne bottle because we figured, I mean, even through the years, like even in the 60s, there were rumors of, and the 70s, rumors of the place closing because of, you know, just the riots at the time.
Oh, yeah.
There were a lot of...
I worked there then.
Did you, yeah.
Grateful Dead were here.
Grateful. Well, the worst one was when Edgar, I'll never forget the band, it was Edgar Winter with his White Trash band, Peter Frampton, and I can't remember, there was a third band. And the Pagan Motorcycle Gang came into Columbia. They actually cut holes in the fence, and they were driving their motorcycles in and around on the grounds. The place had just total chaos.
Now, you were working there at the
time?
Yeah,
I was working.
You couldn't stop this from happening?
Well, you know, it's
single-handedly,
funny.
Single-handedly, right?
It was funny. But, you know, you have these golf carts that you get around the property on.
And we still do.
And, yeah, I was backstage, and at that time, Art Kaplan, I believe it was one of the, or Fred Glassberg, one of the top HRD executives said, you know, we need you to use the golf carts to go up in the crowd and help bring people who were hurt backstage so we can get them in ambulances. And I was, okay, so, you know, we had hard hats and we had radios on. I wasn't even thinking of it. But we'd go up into the crowd. And of course, we got these radios on. People thinking, you guys cops? Of course, I had hair down on my shoulders. I looked like about as much like a cop as you do. And it was, we we felt like we were in danger just trying to help people out. It was a wacky, crazy night.
But that's a scary thing. That would have been potentially inciting a crowd.
Yeah. Howard County probably had 25 real cops at the time.
Well, you know, it was still a pretty big county, but it then led to the shut it down. Then for a while there, they only had symphony concerts.
Correct, and that didn't pan out really well, unfortunately. I mean, they were great shows. But, you know, people, they just didn't want to spend money on that type of performance. What they really wanted was a performance for free. And we're actually still trying to figure that whole piece out, which was one of the initiatives from this Blue Ribbon, or, you know, as Paul says, Blue Ribbon, the Task Force Committee a few years back. And then as you, you know, move forward into the 80s, the issue was the sound. Right. So then there was this whole circulation of rumors going around, oh, Meriwether's going to close because it's too noisy and the neighbors are encroaching upon the venue.
And then the shows have to be over 10, right?
For a period of time, yep, you've got a great memory, Dennis. We did have to stop the shows at 10, but that was really inconvenient to the bands because right. they're all on schedule like everybody else was on schedule. And if you're used to, let's say you have a government job and you're used to going in at 8 and coming home at 4, then all of a sudden somebody wants to alter your hours by an hour in either direction, it kind of causes a lot of issues. So with them, they are used to playing until 11, you know, going on at 8 or so and playing until 11. So that became an issue. And we were able to deal with it for a while. But then, you know, there starts to be a lot more competition in our industry with Wolf Trap entering more into the contemporary world of entertainment. And Wolf Trap, for those of you who don't know, they are the only federally funded outdoor amphitheater in the country because they're a part of the Department of the Interior. So they don't pay any taxes, but they do get a lot of subsidies from their donors and, you know, even in a sense from the government too because of some of the really nice concessions that they're given. So they start entering into the world of contemporary entertainment. Nissan is built in 1995, the Nissan Pavilion, down in Virginia. And even though you might think Virginia isn't our market, it is our market. You know, we have 8 million people to market to in the Baltimore, Washington metropolitan area.
It's a long drive down there, though.
It is a long drive down there.
What impact has Nissan had on people coming to Meriwether? Has it really impacted it at all?
Well, actually, if you go there once, you're not going to go there again. But
that's what a lot of people say. I've heard a lot of people say. Yeah. The traffic coming out of there is right.
Yeah, the traffic's really bad.
It's a nice facility, though, I understand.
It is a nice facility. I mean, Meriwether is a lot nicer just because, obviously, because of the location. Geographically, it's right off of, it's right between Baltimore and D.C., right off of Route 29. You know, it's easy
and
easy.
Nissan's in Bristol, Virginia?
Down in Manassas, Virginia. But even when that venue was built, you know, the rumors were all circulating, oh, Meriwether's going to close because, you know, Nissan's here now.
Right.
And we've been able to survive just fine in terms of the effect that they've had on us. Everybody just needs to get smarter. When there's competition, you just need to get smarter, need to tighten your bottom line more, and just look at your expenses a little bit more, make sure you're not paying too much for the artist, and that could be a problem sometimes. But Meriwether's been doing great, and now that Seth and Rich are in there, they have been able to go in there. They're the first promoter that Meriwether had that's really from the hometown. In the past, it was always, you know, a suitcase promoter, somebody from
New York
somebody from far away, somebody who never understood
New York City.
the local market, the local economy. And Seth and Rich, being raised in the Bethesda Potomac area down in Montgomery County, having the 930 Club, promoting in and out of D.C. and Baltimore and the various venues in both markets, they've got a keen eye on what's going to work at this venue, and they're also, creative isn't even a good word for them. They're really good at escapism, and they're just super creative individuals, and it starts from the top, and it just pans down to all of us.
So what is GGP's redevelopment plans going to do to Meriwether? How's that going to impact the facility? How's that going to change the kind of artists you're able to attract?
In terms of the impact, it's going to be great because it's going to add, you know, from what we see, you know, and granted some of it might be looking into a crystal ball a bit.
Right.
But in terms of some of the designs that we've seen, the connectivity that's going to happen with the walkways, that's going to be great for the mall. It's going to be great for us. It's going to be great, obviously, for the people that buy tickets to Meriwether. In terms of tourism and economic impact and all of those financial-related items, there's going to be hotels closer to us. I mean, not the hotels that we have are fine, but this just makes it that much easier for everybody.
Right.
And it's just going to finally, with the final redevelopment phase of Town Center, really help to make Meriwether more part of Columbia. Not that it's really on an island. It's in a beautiful location inside of Symphony Woods, and with the changes that Columbia Association is doing now under the direction of Phil Nelson, that's all going to work in a really positive direction for us. So we're all eager and looking forward to the changes, you know, to the next 20 years or 25 years and beyond.
So what kind of shows do you have lined up for this year?
We have a really solid schedule. We opened up already earlier this month with My Morning Jacket with the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. This weekend at the end of Wine in the Woods, we have Sugarland with Jake Owen and Danny Gokey, who was part of American Idol. The Bamboozle Road Show with All Time Low, Good Charlotte, Boys Like Girls. We have three nights of Capitol Jazz Fest coming in at the beginning of June with performers like Gladys Knight, Leah Rittenour, Kenny G,
Gladys Knight,
Rochelle Farrell, Patti LaBelle. Then M3 Rock Festival comes in the following weekend, so it's the exact opposite crowd.
The what Rock Festival?
M3 Rock Festival.
The M3.
Yep, this is the second year that it has played there, and it's actually the brainchild of our production manager and operations director, Brad Canfield. And that's coming in with the Scorpions, Cinderella, Kix, and Vince Neil. Did great last year. It's even doing better this year. We're partners with 98 Rock on it.
Now, what's the idea of the M3 Festival? I mean, why is there anything special about the bands that you bring in for that?
It's bands that typically weren't necessarily always booked at Merriweather.
Okay.
And this is just another genre of music to show that this genre of music is still capable of selling tickets. There's still a market there for it. So it's really going into an untapped market.
And you've already done it, so you know it's a success, so you're bringing it back.
Last year was the inaugural year for it, and it did fantastic. And this year, the ticket sales are even north of where they were last year when the event ended.
Wow.
It's really a great diversity of shows and attractions to different kinds of people. I think that makes it great.
And I was happy. I actually recognized some of the names that she said.
That's really good. So maybe we'll see you out there this summer.
And the ones that you don't
and
recognize, ask Allie.
Allie
knows all about them.
So, Gene, let's finish off maybe with a war story or two, if we could. You know, being there as long as you've been there, you've got to have some really good stories about an artist that was a complete nightmare, a story maybe like Dennis's about the fences getting ripped out and coming through with motorcycles. What's the one or two stories that really stick out for you?
Well, I do have an arsenal of stories, but most of them are not for public consumption.
Aw, nuts.
But you know, some of the fun things we've done over the years, when artists would come in and they would play 2 days, like Chicago or back in the day, Jackson Brown, we'd have these really fun softball tournaments with them.
Yeah.
And it was with the actual band members themselves, the crews, and it was the staff. And we would always have a really, really, really fun time.
Yeah. So it wasn't supposed to be a softball, that question.
And there's been, you know, just over the years, there's, I'm trying to think of some real, you know, pretty benign ones off the top of my head. There was one time when there was a delivery that was coming right to Elton John, and it had somebody else's name on it, but Elton John actually came out, and there was the DHL guy or the FedEx guy coming to deliver the package. So he walks out, he signs his name to take this package, and the FedEx delivery person goes, "What's your name again, sir? I can't read it." So that was kind of cool. It was really fun to see
Dennis,
that.
He was sort of in the position you were in just a few minutes ago, not recognizing any of those names.
Right.
It was Elton John.
Yeah.
And then another really fun story is Frank Sinatra was there, you know, a few, well, obviously many moons. Well, not many moons ago, but probably 10 years ago or so.
Back when I worked there.
So, and that was since then. It was, the late 90s or so, mid-90s, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, he put on a great show. And his wife was looking for him frantically one time because I don't know where she thought he was, but he was backstage, and she couldn't, you know, he was like MIA or something, missing in action. And he had stepped over to one of our employees who was doing a really good job, and Frank Sinatra reached into his own pocket, pulled out a $100 bill, gave it to this employee, and said, "You're doing a really good job. Thank you very much for taking care of all of
us." Real
gentleman.
And
yeah, it was really sweet. And, you know, then eventually his wife found him, yelled at him, even though he was doing something good. But, you know, par for the course, I guess.
Yeah, when he was there, when I worked there, Spiro Agnew was still vice president. And I remember he came out for the show. It was a big deal in Columbia back then.
Yeah, that was great. Jimmy Carter came out once to Willie Nelson. That was a lot of fun.
That's neat.
So,
Gene, thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to coming out to Merriweather this year and seeing some good shows, and maybe have you back again in the future.
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah. Hi, what's your name?
Alicia.
Alicia, this is a pretty big weekend in the Baltimore area. You got the Preakness, you got Wine in the Woods. Any plans?
Spending the time at home with my family.
Yeah. No Wine in the Woods for you?
No.
No Preakness?
No.
Maybe watch it with the folks.
Sure.
Okay. Hi, what's your name?
Jody.
Hi, Jody. How about you? Any special plans for the weekend?
I would love to do Wine in the Woods, but I'm actually expecting, so no wine for me.
No wine for you. Very good. Congratulations. When's the big day?
October, so we still got ways to go.
Okay, no wine for a while.
Yeah. No.
Thank you. Hi, what's your name?
Stacy.
Hi, Stacy. It's a big weekend in Howard County. Do you have any big plans?
I do. I was going to go to the Columbia Festival of the Arts event tonight, and then tomorrow we're going to go to Wine in the Woods.
My goodness, a whole Howard County weekend.
It is. I can't wait. It's going to be beautiful, like you said. It's a beautiful weekend.
Have you been to the Wine in the Woods before?
I have, as a matter of fact. I go almost every year.
And have you ever been on a year when the weather's just been awful?
I have been on many years when the weather is awful.
But you hung in there and you did it anyway.
Or at least part of the day, yeah.
Red or white?
With Maryland wines, white.
Don't want to take a chance on the reds.
Not normally.
Thank you. That about wraps up another episode of And Then There's That. On behalf of myself and my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to once again thank Michael and Min So for allowing us to commandeer this corner of their Lakeside Cafe in Columbia Town Center on this beautiful spring afternoon for the podcast, and our producer, Dave Bittner, for making us look good on radio. We'll be back again on May 28th with special guest Hal Chow, the preeminent blogger about all things food in Howard County. We'll hope you join us.